Hello guys, welcome to another episode of the Offside Show, where it's our mission to empower, impact, and help soccer players achieve their goals. Today, I'm very excited with our guest. This is Nick Dyer. Nick's a native from Memphis, Tennessee. He's currently a freshman college soccer player for Wofford College. Before going to Wofford, he went to Lausanne High School, where he graduated with honors. During his time in Memphis, he played soccer at Soccer Le, Germantown Legends, and then he had the opportunity to play for Nashville SC Academy team. And then lastly, you know, Nick has been the longest active Magis player from 2019 to 2023, where he completed 168 sessions in the span of 4 years. So Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Happy to be on here.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, I'm to be honest, for all the audience, I'm extremely excited about this. This is the first episode or show that we do with a Magis player, a former, current, the first one. And I'm even more excited because, like I mentioned, you've been with us the longest, right? So super, super excited. So anyways, I just like to start off by, you know, kind of like talking a little bit more about your career, right? You started at Soccer LA, then you went to Germantown Legends. So how was that process? And, you know, why did you make the decision to go from, you know, normal team to a little more competitive team?
Yeah, so when I was little, I just played rec soccer at Soccer LA. Because I wasn't good enough for like the actual club team. And then eventually I got put in the club team. I think it was called like the select team. And then from there, I think it was going into my freshman year of high school. It was kind of like a turning point because a lot of the players were from Soccer LA wanted to join like a better club. So I knew a lot of guys were leaving. I think that's actually when I like first started training with Magis, was to get ready for the Germantown Legends tryouts. And then, yeah, so I went to the tryout. I did pretty well, and then I made the team. And it wasn't, like, easy right from the start. Like, I think the first year I struggled a lot with playing time, and then I just kept doing extra training outside of practice and working hard in practice as well, and eventually, like, earned a starting spot. And then, yeah.
All right, awesome, awesome. So you touched on a few points there, you know, kind of like wanting to go to a better team, a little more competitive. What challenges do you face, you know, when you transition to a more competitive team, and how do you deal with them?
Yeah, I think I remember the first day that I trained with Germantown after I had just made the team. We had a session out at like an indoor facility. And I just remember walking in, like from the start, it felt totally different than anything I'd ever been a part of before. Just as far as the way that the coaches like had the session already set up when we went out there, and the intensity of everybody, like even from the warm up, everybody was focused, they're locked in. And yeah, I mean, I kind of knew right there that that's like what I like wanted. It just felt right for me. Cause I was always, you know, I always like enjoyed working hard. Especially when I was with a group of guys who also felt the same way.
Awesome. Awesome. And then if I'm not mistaken, you started that first year and I mean, you probably got there with the mentality of like, okay, I'm probably going to play. I'm going to have an impact. But then you realize that, you face a wall. So if you can walk us through that process, and then what do you do during that first year to then be able to the following year get a starting spot on the team and then eventually becoming captain of the team?
Yeah, I think like that's something that's happened multiple times in my career, like when you go from one level to a higher level, and I've kind of gotten humbled a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I obviously it's easy to go from a not as good team where you think you're really good and then you play in a better team and like you'll realize really quickly like, oh, I'm actually not as good as I thought I was. And you kind of just have to be honest with yourself. Like, you can't lie to yourself and be like, oh, I should be starting. And then you end up blaming it on the coaches and like making up a bunch of excuses. You just have to be like, yeah, these guys are better than me. Like, the coaches aren't biased, whatever. Even if they are biased, you can't, you know, let that get to you. And then, yeah, I mean, you kind of sit there and complain, or you can try to do something about it, and just put in extra work. And then hopefully in the future, you know, you get rewards from it.
Awesome. Awesome. No, and you touch on something there that I think is very valuable, which is that every time that you've gone to a different level, you face that wall and you face adversity. So do you think that's something that's a necessary step or a necessary process that everybody needs to go through in order to become better?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Because if you're, if you're moving up levels and you're just the best player every time, then you're probably not challenging yourself enough. And I think, it's just reality. Like, you're not always going to be, you know, the best player in the team, you know, and if you are, then you're not on a good enough team. So I think everyone, especially me, like, needs to be humbled at times, and just realize, you know, there's like 15-year-olds playing for Barcelona right now, you know, so you're not as good as you think you are probably.
Yeah, no, and I think it comes down to a mentality thing, right? I mean, always wanting to be better. And I think, and not comparing yourself to anybody else, and just you are your biggest, your biggest person that you're fighting against with, meaning you want to be better tomorrow than what you were yesterday. And that should be the goal every single time, right? But awesome. Then you play for Legends, you know, that second year Legends, became a starter. Started getting more playing time, becoming a captain, and then you got an opportunity to go to the Nashville SC Academy. So if you can walk us through about how did that happen, how that process came a reality, and then please share with us, you know, what things did you do to make that happen? Meaning, you know, what things you do to earn a spot on that team as well?
Yeah, so in my sophomore year of high school, my club coach, Coach Phil, he worked with the coach of the 04 Legends team, Coach Carey, and they like assembled a team of a couple 05s and a lot of 04s to go and scrimmage the Nashville SC Academy team. And luckily, I got selected to be on that team, so we went up and we played the Academy team. And then that was that. We didn't really hear anything back from the academy for a couple of months. And then I remember there was one day I was in my living room and like a bunch of kids on my team were texting each other saying that, like, you know, they'd gotten calls from Coach Phil saying that they'd been invited like for a trial with Nashville. And I remember just sitting there like super anxious, like praying that Coach Phil was going to call me. I was like literally shaking. And then he did end up calling me. And I think there's probably like 8 or 9 kids from our team that got called up. And basically how the trial worked was we went to Nashville. The first trial, there was no like Nashville Academy players there. It was only trialists. And we basically just played like small-sided games in the 11v11s game for like 2 hours or so. And then went back home. And then we had to wait again. And they called. And then like you were going to wait for an email to see if you're going to get invited for the next round of trials. And I got invited back. And then there was like a lot less players this time. And on this trial, there's probably like 25 kids. And we scrimmaged the actual academy team. And I remember this was like the last round of trials. And at the trial, they like set up like a starting 11 just of trialists to play against the academy team. And I thought I should have been in that group from how I'd played in the previous trial, but I wasn't. So, you know, obviously that I kind of told myself like, you'll probably have like 30 minutes to play if that. And this was like, I knew it was the last trial before they made the team. So that was like, you know, that's all the time I had, and they're only going to pick up a couple of kids as well. So I really needed to like focus and like make sure I could give my, like give 100%. And yeah, I mean, I did really well. I went in and played really well, communicated, worked really hard. And then when they like announced who made the team, they would call everybody individually, and they actually called my dad first, and they told him that they're like, you're the first person we're going to call. So I thought I'd made the team, but they told my dad, like, that's actually not what it was. It was just a little bit unclear, but basically they were saying like, I was going to come in on trial again during preseason. So I thought I was special. I thought I was like the first person to make the team, but actually I was like at the bottom because all my other friends got called later and they actually made the team. So then I went to preseason and like everyone else got all the gear and everything. I didn't get any gear. I just got like an old Nationals like training shirt from a couple years ago. And I was the only kid on trial, for our age group. But at that point, like I wasn't really too worried because, like I knew a lot of those guys and I knew I could, you know, compete with them or play better than them. So yeah, I mean, I just had a really, I mean, I felt super confident. So just played really well, worked really hard every day, and then ended up making the team after first week.
Wow. I mean, you touched there on something that I think is important for the audience to pay attention to, which is the way you got selected to go to Nashville was thanks to a team that Coach Carey and Coach Phil put together to go for a trial there and play against them. If that wouldn't happen, we don't know, but maybe, you know, you wouldn't have had the opportunity to go there. Maybe you would have, we don't know, but it was thanks to that that the first step was taken. So why am I mentioning that is because that wouldn't happen if you wouldn't made the decision to go from Soccer Ole to Legends, right? So we goes back to our first point. We're talking about the importance of always leveling up. Always, okay, I reached the ceiling. Okay, I need to get better. I need to continue improving. I need to be surrounded by people that are better than me. Let me push. And it's going to be uncomfortable. Heck, the first year, you didn't touch the field much. I still have the image of going to watch you play in Jackson and a very important game. And I think you were a sub. You enter on the game, played for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. They took you out. You didn't touch the field again. And I just have this image about of you in the bench after you guys lost, because you guys lost that game, with your head completely down, because being disappointed. And I know how much that hurt you. Because I mean, but in that moment, we were working together for a while now. So I know how much you were in pain. But most people, or the easy route for people is like, you know, I'm going to stay where I feel comfortable. I'm going to stay where I play the most. I'm going to stay where, you know, people understand me. But putting it all together, if you didn't take that decision to go from Soccer Ole, which I don't have anything against Soccer Ole. I think Soccer Ole is a good club. They do some things right.
Yeah.
But there's a certain age group that you probably need to do, take a different move. If you didn't do that, and if you didn't go through all the struggles, so the consequences of making that move, maybe you wouldn't even, you know, made it to Nashville. We don't know. But that's important too. And another point I want to make, the importance of decisions. Life is all about decisions, guys. Life is all about decisions. There are key decisions that make a huge impact in your life. We can even extend it more. I mean, heck, you're in college now. Who knows if that not making that decision when you were younger wouldn't allow you to be where you are right now. And it sucked.
Yeah, it's true.
I remember. It sucked. It was tough. But you pay off. So that happens when, you know, we throw ourselves in there into, we're clear about what we want. We throw ourselves in something that maybe we're not ready for it, but it's going to make us grow. So I just want to acknowledge you for that thing, because I know it was not easy. But when you look at it now and you see the whole picture of it, you see like, shoot, I made the right decision, you know?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
But now talk to me, what was the biggest differences between playing for, because now, of course, you made a change in Memphis. Now you made a bigger change, a bigger jump. You know, there's no MLS teams in Memphis. You know, the only MLS team in Tennessee is Nashville. There's no ECNL teams in Memphis. So yeah. What are the key differences between, you know, the level in Memphis to now at Nashville playing for Nashville SC Academy?
Yeah, I mean, I think the differences are like crazy. And I even knew it just from the first trial. Just the way, the first thing you notice is, I guess, the way that the coaches behave. Just kind of the way they hold themselves and the way they speak to you, it feels like, it just feels way more professional. I think that's the best way to say it. I know it's cliche, but, when you're actually on the team, like, everything is different. Like, just the way you travel, like, even, like, in locker rooms, like, they didn't want us to be on our phones. Team meals, we couldn't be on our phones. I could list like 100 things, but also just like taking care of gear. Like, obviously we had like a room with all the gear and all the balls, and we were responsible for taking everything out at a certain time so the coaches could set up the session. And then additionally, like, one of the main things is just the attitude of the players, which kind of like makes everything work. Because without that, like, it's nothing. I remember it always felt like a competition to see who like would be like out of the training field first, like before practice. And I remember like sometimes, because I went to a different school than other kids, I would get off a little bit later on like certain days. I remember getting like super mad because like other kids would be out there before me, like already like doing extra stuff or like, you know, doing rondos or passing around or whatever. That was a big thing. And then you should be way more responsible, like travel, like, you know, if you're expected to be somewhere, you're supposed to be there like 15 minutes before the time on the schedule says it. Everything. Yeah. Just sets you up really well for, just life in general, I think.
And now what about playing wise, you know, the playing wise, the competition that you play, what are some key differences between where you were there in Nashville compared to in Memphis?
Yeah. Obviously the players are a lot better because it's like the best players from every team around the area. But then also it's like, it's all the players who are also super committed. So it's like everybody wants to work their ass off. You can just see it in sessions. Like, I remember we'd do like 1v1 drills, like pressing drills, and people would just like literally just be trying to hurt each other, like not even really going for the ball. Obviously that's not good, but I think it just shows how much everybody cared. That just drove everything. Like in the games, people would work their asses off just because, you know, that's why they're there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, again, what we were talking before, right? It's a higher ceiling, right? A higher ceiling. So then you are at an environment where everybody in that environment, everybody wants to play professional.
Yeah.
No, for sure. Everybody wants to play in college and at a D1 school, you know? So, most likely everybody wants to play professional, right?
Yeah.
Well, you compare it to, here in Memphis, you know, some people want to play professional. Some people want to play in college, which is okay. But again, it goes back to kind of like aligning with what things do you want and what you want to get out of every situation. Also, one thing that I want to point out is, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, that was the first time that you left home to live on your own, correct? When you go into Nashville. So
yeah.
Tell me about that a little bit, you know, what learning experience did you get from that year living on your own for the first time?
Yeah. So that obviously was a huge part of it. Just because, I mean, obviously playing for like the academy team is super stressful and it can be really frustrating at times, especially if things aren't going your way. So there's that. And then also you have to balance that with school and living without your family. So, you know, you don't have like the luxury of going home and seeing your mom like cooking you food or whatever. And you can like tell her about everything you're upset about. So, yeah, I lived with the host family for the year. They were amazing. Like, I literally don't think I could have had a better host family. They were so nice to me. They would cook dinner for me every night. And, you know, they're always checking in with me, like, just making sure I was okay, asking how soccer was going. But I mean, it's really hard at the same time. Like, you have to do your own laundry. I did my own grocery shopping, like literally pretty much everything I did by myself, except they would cook dinner for me, which is a huge help. But yeah, it was a big change, you know, cause I went from like a lot of things being done for me at home. Like my mom would do my laundry, like a bunch of stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's tough, and it's just compounded with the stress of playing for the academy team as well.
Yeah, man. Well, Coach Carlos, he went through something like that too, right? Yeah. I mean, when he was 14 years old, he left Venezuela to go play for IMG Academy. And so, you know, in Florida, so similar scenario, but, you know, you mature, right? And I think that the fact that you went through that, it's amazing, because you grew as a person like tremendously, you know. And again, going back to the same topic, it's growth. You know, the goal should be to see growth in everything that we're doing, and everything that every stage that we're going in our lives. Awesome. Talk to me now a little bit about what was the day in the life of, you know, a National SC Academy player. If you could walk us through, you know, from the moment you wake up to the moment you got to bed, you know, what time would you wake up? What did the day look like?
Yeah, so we would train like every day in the afternoon at 4, and then 2 or 3 days of the week we would also have morning training at, I want to say, 7:30. So on those days with morning training, I'd wake up at 6:30, like grab a bite to eat, and then drive to the school, which basically where we trained, and the first team trained here as well. It was at like a really fancy boarding school in Nashville. And we just had like our own section for the academy on like the side of the campus. It was super nice. But yeah, so I'd drive up to campus, go to the locker room, put on my boots and change and everything. And we'd go train for about an hour. Usually the morning sessions would be like a lot of playing, maybe some technical work, but it was just like really to focus on what you needed to work on. And we'd have time, like 15 minutes towards the end, to just work by ourselves or with a partner on like things that we need to work on to improve our game. And then after that session, like for me, my online school started a little bit earlier than the rest of the kids. So I would have to like sprint up to the shower. I was late pretty much every day. And then I'd shower really quickly and then run over to the classroom with my school backpack. And then since I did online school, I'd join, you know, Zoom calls or whatever. And then all the other kids would come into this. We'd be in a classroom together. They all did online school as well. And we'd go to lunch together. It was really fun. Like we would have recess together. We'd go play basketball outside. And then, whenever we got off of school, around like 3 or whatever it was for different people, we'd go out to the training field and then have practice at 4 for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours. And after that, you know, you go home, I'd go home, and then, you know, maybe like I'd either go to the gym, depending on like what we'd done during the day, or maybe get like a couple extra touches in, and then just eat, do my homework, go to sleep. Like there really wasn't much free time at all, but it was pretty nice to have like a strict schedule every day. Because even on the days without morning practice, I'd wake up and early, like keep the same schedule and go get touches in at like this park by my house. So yeah, I mean, I just really enjoyed having like a strict schedule, because it, you know, it held me accountable. Like I couldn't slack off or anything.
Yeah. Awesome. What's your favorite memory while your time in Nashville?
It's a good question. Definitely one of the trips. Like we were super lucky. Like being in an academy, the like club pays for all your travel and everything, so we didn't have to pay like a single dollar for the whole year essentially. But yeah, I mean, we got to go to some really cool places that like yeah, I mean, it was super cool. Like, we got to go to New York, Florida a couple of times. We went to California, Texas. But I think my favorite memory was going to the GA Cup in Texas, just like seeing like academy teams there, like River Plate, Manchester United, Celtic, like all these crazy, crazy teams, and just watching them play. It was pretty surreal because, I mean, like, I knew I played for an academy and all that, but like, I wouldn't consider myself, like, I would have never considered myself, like, you know, to be like playing or like even like close to like an academy team like that, like Real Madrid, they were there as well. So just like literally being on the sideline, or our team, I didn't play in this game, but our team played River Plate. I know you were there, obviously. And just watching that, we got smacked, but it was just like, what is like, how have I gotten here? You know, it was just crazy, crazy experience.
Yeah, no, no, that's fantastic. And again, it's another ceiling higher, right? Those teams.
Yeah, that level. Exactly.
But, you know, it's about the experience, right? You got to experience that and you saw the level and the quality that those guys play at. Great. Then, yeah. You know, you came back to Memphis. So what happened in that process? So you were in Nashville, I think, for 1 year, and then you came back to Memphis. So what happened there?
Yes. Yeah, so towards the end of the season, we weren't sure if there was going to be an under-19 team or not, because I played on the under-17s. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of the players were pretty stressed out because we weren't – I mean, like, we had no idea if we're going to be living there for another year or not. And they kind of kept that a secret from us until the very end. And then they kind of just dropped that information on us that there was not going to be an under-19s team, which meant that either you're going to stay and train with the first team and they're going to try to sign you to a homegrown or sign you to the second team, which we didn't even have yet, or you're going to get cut. And I remember they were talking to players one by one and they ended up releasing me. And I remember the coach asking me, he was like, you know, it's going to be your senior year. He gave me a bunch of reasons, whatever. And he was like, but I think we're going to end up releasing you. He's like, what, like, would your plans be if that was to happen? And I told him, I was like, yeah, well, first of all, I want to stay, because the reasons he gave me, whether they're valid or not, I didn't think that they were like serious enough reasons. And they weren't really about soccer. It was more him saying like, oh, you need to be home with your family and all this stuff. And whether that's, well, the actual reasons now, I'm not sure, but I didn't think that was, you know, I didn't really agree with that. So I just said, like, first of all, I would like to stay. But second of all, if I did have to leave, like, I would right away try to, like, get a trial or a training session with Memphis 901, the USL team in Memphis. I remember the coach telling me, he was, like, basically saying, like, yeah, you're weighing over your head. He's like, you can try, but... He's like, I know some of those players, like, it's a lot higher level than you think, which he was right. It was a way higher level than I thought it was. But I mean, I could kind of tell he was like, yeah, there's no way it's going to happen, dude. But anyway, so I got released and then went back home. And then right away, I tried to get in contact with the Memphis 901 coach, and Kerry Talley from Germantown Legends helped me with that. And then I emailed the coach, basically sent him like some highlights. And I was like, I play with Nashville Academy. I'd love to come out for a training session if you'd be open to it. And then he literally said, he's like, all right, come out on Thursday. I think I emailed him on a Tuesday. So I was like, oh crap. I need to get ready right now. Mm-hmm. But luckily I'd been training and everything, so I was fit. But yeah. And then basically I started training with Memphis 901 from after that.
And, you were playing with Memphis 901 and also with Germantown Legends, correct? During that time?
Yes.
Awesome. So how was the level at Memphis 901 comparing it to where you were at Nashville?
Yeah, it was not even close. Like, I can't explain how big of a difference it was. I remember the first day I walked in. And there's two locker rooms. There's one locker room for the senior players and then another locker room for like the academy kids and trilets. And I didn't know that. So I just walked into the first locker room, which was the senior player locker room. And I'd never done anything like that before. So like when you're on trial, you're supposed to shake everybody's hands and introduce yourself. But I actually went straight to the back and just sat down, and I didn't really say anything. So I was super nervous. And luckily, one of the goalies was super nice. He was like, "Hey man, what's your name? Like, what's up?" I was like, "I'm Nick. I'm like training with y'all today." And he was like, "All right, well, first of all, like, next time you walk in here, you need to introduce yourself and shake everyone's hand." And he was like, "And also the academy locker room's over there." I was like, okay, I just walked out.
That's a great first impression right there.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, he just told me how it was. I went to the academy locker room. I was definitely more comfortable in there because, you know, I think everyone in there was a little bit nervous. There was a lot of, you know, a couple younger guys, a couple trialists. But, so I remember we went out to the session and, like, we did rondos and stuff. And, like, I wasn't included in anything. I was just watching. And then we did 11s, like, right towards the end. And Coach Ben, who was the head coach at the time, asked me, he was like, "Hey, like, what position do you play?" And I was like, "Center back." And he was like, are you good? And he's kind of messing with me. I know what to say. I was just like, "Yeah, I think so." Or I think I just said, "Yeah." He was like, "All right, go play center back on, you know, whatever team." So I went, I don't remember, like, I probably connected like one pass and made like a bunch of mistakes. And the second day we did a lot of small sided. I probably turned over the ball like 80% of the times that I got it. So it was really rough at the start. Like, the speed of play is just way, way, way faster than like anything I'd experienced before. And it was really hard to adapt. It took me like probably a couple months to really get, you know, more comfortable.
Wow. I didn't know the beginning
yeah,
of you coming into a locker room, and that's hilarious. Well, cool. And then, you know, time passed and you got the opportunity to be called up for a few matches. You didn't get the opportunity to get on the field, you know, during your time in 901, but, you know, how do you deal with that? You know, feeling that you're doing a good job, you're performing well, you're used to a speed of play now, they're calling you in the 18, you're in the stadium with thousands of people, but you didn't get that chance. So how do you deal with that internally? How do you use that? How do you stay motivated to keep working towards that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think in the second season that I was with 901, so the first season I got called up to 2 games. And in the second season, we got a new coaching staff, and I was a lot more comfortable now, obviously, with the speed of play and the everything like that. So, and also in the second season, I got into playing some preseason games as well, so that also helped me a lot, you know, kind of relaxed on the ball and everything. But yeah, it got to a point where I was getting caught up for like more games than not. I was getting caught up almost every game for home and away games. And every game, it was like the same thing. It was like, because you can only make 5 subs unless like injuries or something happens. And we would have 7 subs on the bench, one guy being a goalie. So there were 6 field players I could sub in. And I was always the guy who wouldn't sub in like every game. And like, it was frustrating, but I also understood it at the same time, because like, realistically, like, you know, like, I could keep up with those guys. And some weeks I'd play really well, but like, I mean, I knew that like those guys were better than me, even if I maybe like played better than them for one day or something like that, you know, I knew, I mean, it almost felt like, you know, the coach would be going a little bit out of his way if he was to play me. So I mean, I would get super frustrated because I felt like I deserved to at least make my debut. But at the same time, you know, I couldn't like look at anybody other than myself, you know, because I knew like if I was like at a certain level, I would be playing. So I couldn't, you know, point fingers and be like, "Oh, it's not fair," whatever. Like, you just kind of, I kind of just had to get over it and just, I mean, I don't know. You just have to be grateful for the opportunity, because like, literally, like, two or three kids in the whole city get to train with this team. And I was like the only one that was getting called up for games. So like, you know, of course I can be frustrated with, you know, not getting to like play, but at the same time, there's so much like I have to be grateful for. And the training was like such a high level. You know, I mean, it was hard to be like super upset about it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, and there's two things that I think that you mentioned that are very important. Number one, you touch on, you know, the resilience of keep trying, right? Of not giving up, of keep pushing. And at the end of the day, like a lot of times players, people, they get caught up too much on the present, on what's going on in their life right now. But they don't understand, like, if you give your goal a long-term horizon and you understand that each time you go through tough moments, uncomfortable situations, you're actually, and you keep pushing and you keep going, you're actually building that resilience muscle. The more you keep pushing when those things happen, the more you stay motivated, the more you stay disciplined during those moments, because it's easy to stay disciplined and motivated when things are going your way. Everybody can do that.
Yeah.
But when things are not going their way, that's when it's hard. So that's the first thing that I want to point out. Like, for everybody listening to this, you're going to go through tough times and in any form or in any way. But it helps a lot to reframe the picture. And by reframing the picture, you start realizing that you don't feel that frustrated anymore. And then my second point to what you said, you touch upon gratefulness. So that's the reframe that you decided to have to this situation, which is like, okay, I've been called up almost to every single game. I haven't played. Sucks. But heck, look, I'm one out of three guys in this whole city that's training with this team. Heck, I'm the only one that is getting called up. So this guy believes in me. Heck, I'm playing with, I'm in a professional team as a, 16, 17-year-old kid. How many kids, not only in Memphis, but in the United States, have that opportunity? Not many. So by you reframing your situation, by you reframing your circumstance, that's when the frustration goes away. You feel more motivated. You stay disciplined. And then eventually, your time comes. For you at Memphis, didn't come the opportunity to play, but everything from that situation was positive because you build that resilience muscle in your long term, not only for your soccer career, but in everything and for your life. Right now, you understand that if you go through another situation like this, you've already been through it and you grew from it and you continue building that resilience muscle.
Can I add something as well?
Yeah.
I think like also one thing about being in an environment like that where you're like the rookie and the guys are playing at such a higher level than you, it's like, you know, when you get frustrated, there's only two things you can do. Like, you can either like complain and have like bad body language and like super upset, or you can just go work and just like work your ass off. Because if you're gonna complain and like whine about it, like, all it's going to do is just make the coaches lose respect for you. And, I mean, they'll literally just cut you. Like, they don't care. Because I'm not getting paid. Like, I'm not playing. I'm not that valuable to the team. So, like, not valuable enough for them to, you know, like, deal with that stuff. Like, it's one thing if you're the best player on the team. But when you're in an environment where you're not at all the best player on the team, I think that was really valuable for me because, like, you know, just it taught me that, like, I can't, you know, get too upset about it or else I'll just shoot myself in the foot. So like really the only option was just to, you know, be humble and just work hard every day. That's literally all you can do.
Yeah. I mean, that's real life. You know, it's not, you're not playing for your church team anymore. You're not playing for your rec league team anymore.
Yeah.
Everybody gets playing time. Everybody needs to be happy and you can go on. You know, your parents can go and complain to the coach, complain to the AD. Like, this is real life. I mean, it's literally, you're playing with people's food in the table.
Yeah.
That's their job. right? So it's a different mentality, right? So again, just comes down to changing that perspective. Perspective is everything. Is everything, and everybody has the total power and total control of the perspective. But awesome. Then, you know, throughout this process, of course, your goal of playing collegiate soccer was present. You know, thankfully, you were able to you know, get a scholarship to play for Wofford College, great D1 school. But if you can share a little bit more about, you know, if you could share some tips about, you know, players that are in your shoes where you were like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, not knowing how to maneuver the college recruitment process, how to go about it, how to talk to coaches, you know, mm-hmm. things that you did. If you can share some tips that work for you in order to make it to the collegiate level.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a couple things. So like one, obviously, like the basic stuff, you need to have a really good highlight video, like a concise email where you say why you're interested in the school and you tell a little bit about yourself. And then just email, like make a list of like 30 or so schools that you're interested in and shoot them emails. And then another thing is you just have to stay really consistent. Like if a coach doesn't respond to you, don't take it personally. Like they receive like hundreds or thousands of emails like every day. So it's easy for them to miss your email. It's like, it's okay to just email them again and be like, hey coach, you might've missed my email. Just wanted to make sure you saw it. And then also I think you kind of like one thing that I maybe didn't do, which I kind of learned towards the end of the recruitment process, which helped me, is like, you really have to value yourself. Like what I mean by that is like when coaches are calling you, like you can't act like, you know, you're a low priority. I mean, you also can't act super cocky, but you have to have like a level of respect for yourself. And that just means like, you know, like it's okay to like kind of push things along with the college. Like a lot of times for me, I would send colleges updates about like what I was doing and everything, but I never like really tried to push it forward. Whereas if I was to do it again, you know, I'd send updates and then I'd ask the coach to be like, hey, so like, would you be willing to like bring me on a visit or, you know, things like that? Or like, what's your timeline for like looking to send out an offer or certain thing, like just trying to push it along a little bit, I think definitely would help. But yeah, I mean, kind of for me, how it worked was I was talking to a lot of schools, but didn't really have anything super serious with a lot of schools. And I got kind of unlucky. I got an offer from Cal Poly and I thought I was going to go there, but then the coach had to retire for health reasons, like literally like a couple of days after he offered me. So that got messed up. And then, you know, a lot of schools I was talking to them, but they didn't give me like anything serious, any offers or anything. And then, I mean, I think I don't want to say I got lucky because I think I worked really hard to get a college offer. And I didn't get one until the end. And I think it was just kind of like a sign, I guess, that maybe I deserved it or whatever. But the coach at the University of Memphis actually helped me out, Coach McManus. He and actually Coach Hector helped me out too. But so Hector reached out to Coach McManus, and then Coach McManus got in touch with me and reached out to a couple of schools for me. And then the Wofford coach texted me like a day later, and soon after that I was on a visit. And I think he's really liked how I carried myself. I was really respectful and everything. And I sent him some film of me at a combine with Memphis 901, which went with a bunch of college and like pro guys. So also sending film like of you playing at like the highest level too is super important. And yeah, after that, then he offered me and I took it like right away.
And two things I want to touch on here. Number one, I mean, for anybody listening, Nick is, I mean, as you guys have been hearing so far, play at Nashville, MLS team, train with Memphis 901. I mean, when you look at especially local players in Memphis, he was basically at the highest level that you can be. Maybe the only thing that he was missing was probably being a starter for Memphis 901 or something like that. And just look how much it took.
Yeah.
Right? Just look how much it took of reaching out, of you know, staying consistent on, you know, going to camps and calls and highlight reels. And so all I'm saying is, for anybody listening, it's not easy. People think it's easy. People think going to play in college is easy. People think that, oh, a coach is just going to come and watch me. And or some good players that are at the highest level, oh, I'm good. I'm just going to go and somebody's going to reach out to Slate. No, you're, because you're not competing against kids in Memphis. You're not even competing against kids in the United States, by the way. You're competing against kids around the whole freaking world. Heck, I came from Venezuela. Yeah. I mean, and that's it, right? And there's tons of guys just like me that, you know, they were trying to play professional. Something happened in Europe, or they got released, or whatever. They try. They want to try a different path. They go to the United States. And these are guys that usually play at a very high level, the international kids. So,
yeah,
it's tough. It's not easy. So all that to say is, like, you gotta work your butt off. You gotta work your butt off, and you have to be proactive, and you gotta be on top of things, and you gotta, you know, really push through it. And last thing here, I wanna touch on with your point is huge shout out to Tony McManus, man. Huge shout out to Tony. Tony, you know, he was my coach and my assistant coach at Memphis, and he gives this idea that he's like a tough guy because he gels and, you know, he's very energetic, which I like that about him. I don't have anything against that. But people that know him personally know that he's a guy that he will do anything for you. If you are in his circle and if he thinks that, you know, you're a good person, and he will do anything for you. I mean, to give you guys some context, like, they wanted Nick to go to Memphis. They wanted to sign Nick to play at Memphis, but Nick wanted to, you know, leave the city. He wanted to go to a different city. But the same guy that wanted him, you know, hearing this player not going to Memphis, literally was the same guy that helped him go somewhere else. I mean, where do you see that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, That's cool. And I just want to point it out, because all it took, I think, was like a couple of phone calls, and that basically was a smooth process. But awesome. I know we're running out of time here, Nick. Just a couple of last questions. What does your day-to-day life look like playing for Wofford?
Yeah, it's definitely a little different. But it's kind of similar to how it was at Memphis 901, because we train and then you just go to school. I mean, well, I guess it's similar to everything, but it feels more like Memphis 901. But basically, well, right now our season's over, so it's a little bit different. But in season, we would train at 3:30 every day. So you wake up, you go to school during the day, whatever your class schedule is. Maybe you don't have classes that day. But I'd go to class, go to lunch, and then, you know, if you need treatment or whatever, you can go to the locker room and roll out. You can go early to the locker room, but we're supposed to get to the locker room 20 minutes before training at least. So I'd usually get there around 3, and then roll out, stretch, whatever I need to do to get ready for practice. And then we'll go out there, or the coaches will come in and talk with us. We go out to practice, you know, train whatever we're working on for that day. The training sessions were actually like they're a good level here. The coaches said the sessions really well. And then after that, after the session, usually a couple guys would stay after to get some extra work in with whatever they needed to work on. So I would try to stay after, like almost every day, unless I needed to get like an ice bath or whatever. But, and then after that, basically you're kind of on your own. So usually what I would do is, like, I'd go with other freshmen. We'd go to the dining hall to get dinner. And after that, you just do your homework, you know, whatever you want to do to, like, relax, like watch soccer. Some guys play video games, you know, I'll read a little bit, whatever. I guess just like the rest of it is just during the day, kind of, because I mean, you can only train so much as a college team. Like, there's rules about it. And the season is so dense with games. Like, sometimes if you're not getting a lot of minutes, you know, you might feel like you want to get some extra training in because the sessions are designed around the starters. So kind of finding time like around your class schedule to get extra work in or go to the gym at night, you know, just to, like, keep a good load on your body and make sure you're, you know, like, improving so you can, you know, if you're not playing as much as you want or whatever, you can, you know, try to fix that for the future.
Yeah. Awesome. And just to finish here, you know, like I said at the beginning, you've been the longest Magis player with us. So what does Magis mean to you?
It's a good question. It just means, like, and for me personally, it just means, like, every day just trying to get, like, 1% better in everything you do. So it's not just soccer. It's, like, you know, doing extra volunteer work or, you know, taking care of your body, eating healthy, taking care of your mind as well, like reading, meditating, doing all these things that make you a better person. And then also I think it's just, like, another big part of it is also giving back to other people. So, you know, like, always, like, whenever you have the opportunity to be nice to somebody or, you know, go out of your way to help somebody else, just, you know, do that extra 1%. But I think, yeah, the main thing really is just every day trying to get better, even on your rest days, you know, like, everything is designed to, you know, be better the next day.
Love it. And last question, man, need to close it up. Imagine, you know, let's say you're going to die tomorrow. You're going to die tomorrow. After tomorrow, there's no more Nick Dyer. But you have the opportunity to leave a message to the whole world to see. It could be a message, a lesson, whatever it may be, for that it's going to stay there forever. It's something that your family are going to see, your friends, anybody's going to see, a message, a learning lesson, or whatever it may be. What message would you leave out there?
That's a good question. Let me think for a second.
It could be a learning experience. It could be a message, a quote, a word.
I mean, I guess just to keep it simple, it's just like, I guess, like, tell the people that care for you that you love them, like, tell them how much you appreciate them. Because I know, like, a lot of people, especially around, like, in the Memphis community, like, a couple people have died recently. Like, just, like, kids that I knew or, like, my friends knew. So, I know a lot of people say, like, tell people you love them, whatever. But I think it actually means a lot, like, because, like, sometimes, like, I'll, you know, get in an argument with my parents or whatever on the phone and, like, won't talk to them for a couple of days or whatever. And I just think, like, it's so pointless, like, you know, like, what if, you know, what if they died or whatever or something less serious? Like, you know, you'd feel pretty bad, you know, trying to hold a grudge against them for something so, you know, so pointless. But yeah, I think that'd be my message.
Awesome, Nick. Well, man, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I want to close by acknowledging you for everything that you're doing, for everything that you've done. I've told you before, but I think, you know, you are a great example of what Magis means. Just the constant pursuit of excellence, the pursuit, being excellent on and off the field through schoolwork, grades, as a soccer player, as a human being, helping, giving a hand out, going the extra mile. And just want you to know that I'm proud of you, very proud of you.
And
I'm excited. I'm excited for you to be in Wofford at a place that you really like, that you love, and everything going for you in the future, man. So, thanks again, Nick, and we'll be in touch soon.
All right, thank you so much.